Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. My host, GP John Paz, with me today, very special guest. She's an author. She's a podcast host. She's a doctor as well. She was a former Nitro girl known as Spice. She is, of course, Dr. Melissa Peterson. Welcome to two-man power trip. How you doing?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
What is going on in your world? What are you up to?
That's a loaded question that could take the entire interview. I have my own institute. It's the Human Longevity Institute. And so many exciting things are happening right now. Like literally, I just got off a meeting an hour ago with an entire group in South Africa. We are bringing programming to South Africa. We're taking things into Mexico. We're going through massive growth because everything that we do is about giving doctors and their patients the means, the protocols, the resources to truly live better today for more tomorrows. And people want to know how to do it without medications and they need help. And so we are doing it and it's phenomenal and it's fun and it's exciting. And that's just a little bit of a day, just one of the things that's going on.
Yeah, you seem to be very, very busy doing TED Talks, right? I mean, you're doing a podcast, you're an author, you got so much going on. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot. I'm a woman on a mission, I guess. Yeah.
How do you handle it all? How do you do all that time management wise?
You know, that's a really great question. And in all honesty, it's something that I get to continue to be better at most of the times. And I've gotten better over the years. So, you know, my offices are a home office, like my whole downstairs are where my whole instance, I go, all my virtual stuff runs. And sometimes when things are in your house, you can be, and you love what you do, you can be a workaholic. So last night, I unfortunately didn't end until 10, but it's kind of finding buckets in my day and I deal with different time zones. So I make sure that I'm carving out time for work. I'm carving out time for family. I'm carving out time for me. Some days I do it better than others. And I'm getting better support around me. Like you have to have support to continue to grow, to be your own best as, and if you've got a business, you've got a platform, you've got anything, you need good people around you. And not that I didn't have good people around me, but I just didn't let enough people in to help me because I thought I was supposed to do it all on my own. And now I no longer have that hang up. So I'm doing it by letting more people in, more people in to help me, help myself, and to help them, and all of us get to thrive and succeed together.
It's what like a good manager does, right? Or, you know, a good coach, they surround themselves with the right people.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
And what's that expression? If you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life, or I think that's how it's said. Yeah.
That's exactly. Kind of, exactly.
So what is the longevity? How do you do it? How do we live longer? How do we get a longer life here?
I really love that you're asking me these questions. I hope that your audience, I mean, I don't know, like I figured we were going to start going right into wrestling.
Oh, I know, because I was curious about you and what you're doing today. It's very interesting. When I was looking into it, I was like, wow, this is interesting.
No, this actually is really great. So I'll say this, and I'll take everybody kind of through a little game with us. So let me ask you this, John, before I answer that question for you, tell me, what do you think of, like when you think of getting older, what comes to your mind?
Gray hair, right? Mm-hmm. Getting gray, getting bald, getting out of shape, getting injuries, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And is that an idea that's exciting to you?
No, not particularly, no.
Yeah. And so you're right. Most of us, the idea, the vision, the belief that we have formed around chronological age. Well, when I hit this age, it means this. If my grandma looked like that at that age and grandpa couldn't do that anymore at that age. And so we have these unconscious beliefs that have been conditioned into us that are say, hey, the body does this at certain times and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's absolutely not true, actually, at all. So first and foremost, longevity, how do we live longer? Well, first we get to start up here, the 6 inches of real estate, right? The most valuable that we own, which is the only way that we're ever going to want to live longer, live better, slow it down, is to first realize that we don't have to do it the way we've been told. And so we get to be a little rebel, which, you know, wrestling is all about rebels and people doing things differently. So we get to show up differently for ourselves. We get to question the norm. Wait, is this really what being, you know, a certain age has to mean? We can look around and see examples. I mean, look, how The Rock is in his, I don't even know, I should know his chronological age. He's in, I think he's around 55. And
51. Look
what he was doing this past weekend, yep. Right?
Or 52, I think, yeah.
So phenomenal. And so there's an example. And anybody would tell you in sports that once you're in your mid-30s, like you're on your way out. And so there's a prime example at 52. I'm also 52. And the level that I perform at, though he performs at, very different than maybe what we envision. Like, well, you get 52, you got aches and pains, you're going to be breaking down, you're going to be gaining weight. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with holding those beliefs, but we know from the literature, there's massive studies done around this. This was over a 20-year period. That people, just by the way we think about aging, can make us either age faster or slower. So just by holding a positive perception about aging, oh, I'm going to be saging, I get wiser as I, you know, I'm like a fine bottle of wine. I can't wait for what's ahead. I'm looking forward to just being able to just do more and more and have more money to, you know, more intelligence and more life experiences to just get more out of life, whatever. So there's the looking forward. Versus those that are, I don't want to age, I don't want to get old, I'm going to break down, I'm going to have gray hairs, I'm going to be in a nursing home, like that sucks, I'm going to lose my memories. I don't want that. People who hold a negative perception of aging actually age 7.5 years faster than those who don't. So those who have a positive perception of, you know what, life is good. Let me I don't have to break down. What if I train like The Rock? I don't even have to train halfway like The Rock. I mean, we know people that don't train at all and they start to train. They have the greatest gains. Like physical exercise is one of the best ways you can slow down how your body ages, keep you really healthy, keep you really strong and vital, looking good, feeling good. And so just by what we think, we can add 7.5 healthy years to our life. So there's a mixture of, we can look at lifestyle, thoughts, our psychology, our physiology. Then we can bring in cool things like, I call them molecules. So that's everything from vitamins, supplements, and peptides. And, you know, there's certain medications that can help us live longer, healthy without sickness and disease. And then there's technologies, there's biohacking, there's lots of cool techniques and things that also can help. And I can talk all day, but I don't know how deep down the rabbit hole you want me to go. So I'll pause there for a moment.
Fascinating though. Like, wow. If you think about it, you're actually going to, you know, and I'm saying like negative things about aging could be wasting or, you know, potentially pushing myself 7.5 years older.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I just put a post out the other day. So Ernie Holmes is a really well-known actor. He was in the Ghostbusters. So he's an African-American Ghostbuster from like the 1980s, right? He just turned 78 and the man is phenomenal. Buff, great skin, vital, strong. And he looks almost the same now as he did back in the 80s. Yeah, and crazy. He's like, all I do is I go to the gym 4 times a week. Like, he's got a healthy approach to his mind and his body. He loves his family. He does things with his wife. Like, he just keeps living his purpose. He keeps living, doing things he loves, loving the things he's doing. And he's continuing to support his body, giving it what it needs to stay strong and vital. He's not just accepting, well, it's 78, I should be in a rocker by now. No, says who, right? So yeah, I love that there's always people out there showing us that more is possible.
Yeah, that it's crazy. Defining, age there. It's just crazy because I would have thought he was younger, but obviously 40 years ago, he was in his 30s. So it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. I know, right? Time flies. And sometimes it's like, yeah. Wait, what? Yeah, yep. I know. It's crazy.
I don't believe that you're 52 either. That's pretty shocking. So
yeah, crazy. Thank you. About to turn 53. The birthday's coming up. Holy cow.
It feels like for some reason, some people in wrestling, like The Rock, Trish Stratus, like age is not a factor at all. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really phenomenal. You know, and we'll talk a little bit about this whenever you want, but we're working with some wrestlers that right now with some peptide therapies and things like that. And I didn't have to go through what they did. As a Nitro girl, I did get in the ring. Obviously, I had a few matches, but to put myself in that category, absolutely not. A dancer is quite an athlete, but the way that the bumps that they have to take and truly what's happening to their body, it takes so much to try to stay ahead of the injuries in a healthy way, not just pain management, but actually helping to give the body more of what it needs to be able to recover so they can get back in the ring, you know, week after week, night after night. And so because of the level of how they perform, the amount of injuries that their body took on, you know, especially kind of during their heyday, requires, like, anytime we just go to the gym and do a workout, our body has to recover every single day, just living through the day. That's why sleep is so essential. Every night is the only time that our body's actually going into deep repair and recovery. And so when we don't get enough recovery, we break down faster and faster, and that actually speeds up how we age. And the faster we age, the faster we break down, the greater our chance of sickness, disease, all-cause mortality, all that kind of stuff. So it really is a testament to what they've done, you know, both when they were there, as well as after, like how they've continued to really, really dedicate themselves to their health and their overall longevity so that they can be more than their injuries from the time in the ring.
So wrestlers now are really getting focused on this, like current wrestlers are focusing on this.
I think, yes. I mean, I would say more are, because I'm old school, right? I'm in a category. So some of the people that we're supporting right now are more the people that were with me back in the WCW days, who are maybe having a comeback, who are on a retirement tour, things like that. Yeah. So, and they're kind of going like, I need help. Like, I can't keep up anymore. And I've got more injuries. How do I repair quicker? How do I keep doing this? It's a grueling sport. It really is.
Did you want to be a wrestler? Because obviously you were a Nitro girl, but did you want to wrestle? Because I know you did have a few matches there.
No, I did not want to wrestle. never at any point in time in my life could have told me that there would come a time that I would be in a wrestling ring, that I would be wrestling on television, on the number one rated show in front of thousands of people live and millions of people at home, I would say, I don't know who you're talking about, but that's not me. Like, no.
How did they talk you into it?
You know, things happen by progression. And so at that juncture, and I've shared this story before because there's so many life lessons in it, you know, but Turner, when Ted Turner decided that he wanted to change, when he brought in WCW, he felt really strongly about wanting to change the role of women in wrestling. He felt that there was more that could also be, you know, Turner was a family friendly, inclusive network. And he's like, the way that women at that point were, there was kind of two things you could be. You could be a wrestler and you had to be really jacked up, like exceptionally gladiator, big woman, or you had to be arm candy. And so you had to have the big boobs and the big butt. And I'm not saying anything wrong about any of that. There were so many beautiful women in the sport, but it was a stereotype. It was a very small representation. You have to be this or that if you want to be in the sport. And that meant as a woman, you have to compromise certain aspects of yourself and your talents and your capabilities and whatever. And they said, you know, this is two visions, but there's so much more. What if we could show little girls more in this industry for women? And that's when the Spice Girls were really popular and everything else. And Kimberly Page really pitched it. So she, you know, and pitched it to Eric, and Eric pitched it to Turner. And they said, yeah, we want to do this concept with the Nitro Girls because we want to have something that the little three-year-old daughter can sit with the eight-year-old brother, right? And the 40-year-old dad and the mom, like the whole family can sit and watch wrestling together and everybody can get something out of it. And that's exactly what happened. Like we had all these beautiful little girls wearing our t-shirts and like they'd show us their dance moves. And so it was actually really pretty brilliant at the time. So when it started, it was this really great thing and there was nothing else like it, of course. And then as the Monday Night Wars were going on, and as, you know, WWE was starting to really make a run in the ratings, what was happening just historically, and younger fans may not have a knowledge or an appreciation of this, but back in the late 90s and the early 2000s, when we were who we were at WCW, there really wasn't reality TV. That was reality TV. Yeah, that and MTV had like, you know, Road Rules or whatever. Like there weren't really, like you didn't have the Housewives, the Real Housewives and all the things that television has become. So that's the only place that you got a sense of, wait, this is happening live, real time. And so they started to do things at the competition that we couldn't do under the FCC guidelines and the just Turner as a production company, because at the time, again, WWE was a sole entity, right? And they sold their programming out. Turner was an entire network. So they owned it and they had different guidelines that they were under. So we couldn't do things like bra and panty matches. Not that we would have wanted to. I mean, as women, that's not something we're excited to go out and do, like to try to get famous. Like, it's just not, like, if we're athletes, we'd really like to be appreciated and respected for our athleticism, not necessarily that we're doing it in a bra and a panty. But that's what was happening, right? And so they were able to start to do that stuff. And I'm getting to your answer about how I got into the ring. So they were doing that and we couldn't. So they start and it was, you know, Stone Cold, like the beer kids, the antics that were happening over there, we just couldn't do in the same way. And so our ratings started to decline and it's kind of like, what's going to happen? So then they brought in the Russo brothers, right? The whole thing. And they're like, basically, they're like, we're going to repeat what's winning over there. So all of a sudden everything that was really great about Nitro got changed so that we were just a copycat of what the competitor was doing. And so we were trying to beat them at their game, but we couldn't because we had more restrictions. So we just couldn't take it the envelope quite as far. And so the next thing they did is they started to just dismantle everything that was there. And one of the first things to get dismantled were the Nitro Girls. And so they needed to create drama. And so we had to start to fight against each other. And so first it started as, you know, tearing us apart. We had to battle one another. And we were in the midst of doing a Nitro Girl search, and Stacey Keebler had just come in and just won the search. And, you know, and they saw her, they were throwing all of us into storylines. It was like, we're keeping you or we're not, because we're not keeping it this way. So we got to figure out who we can put where and how. And so they just kind of started to throw some spaghetti at the wall to see what would stick, who could do what. None of us had any training, you know, like Nora, who'd Nora come go on to be in WWE? Oh my gosh, I should know.
Molly Holly.
Thank you. Molly Holly, of course. Love. She was my coach. Like she, I had to do crash course training with her to get ready for my matches. So they threw us in, and I was like, these guys are, and I mean, I was really fortunate. I had her, right. I had Deb, you know, Medusa. I had some really amazing female wrestlers that kind of took me under their wing, but all I could think about is, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm going to hurt myself, but more importantly, I'm going to hurt somebody else, or I could completely mess this up. And I was like, just like, oh my God. So it was actually a lot of stress. It was because it's not necessarily, I applaud the women in the ring today and I know how hard they train and it's their passion and their desire. But for me, I was like, oh my effing goodness. Like this could go sideways really fast. And it was, yeah. So I was forced in, I went for storylines and they only had to do a few, and I got in the ring and obviously became more like a valet because I think they quickly realized like, yeah, I don't know if Spice is going to be our wrestler. I almost blew it. Like I almost blew it in our big match. So, you know, yeah.
Did you like the training at all, though? Any aspect? I know, obviously, Molly Holly, great trainer. And yes. Great, but any aspect of it?
Yeah, I actually really did. So believe it or not, the stuff that I loved is like what the luchadors did, because I am acrobatic. So getting to do the hurricanradas, like, I mean, I would practice, do it. I should know this. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to be disrespectful to any wrestlers or any wrestling fans. I don't mean to disappoint, but I don't remember the names of all the moves. I really don't, you know, but like sitting up and like you do the flip down, you spin them around, you throw them, like all those moves. I got to learn a lot of really cool stuff. And when you nail a move, it's like, oh, yes, oh my God, I did that thing. So it was actually really fun and it actually was quite empowering. And I think if I would have had, you know, hindsight, if I would have had to be in that role, I would have figured out how to do it. And I would have taken it very seriously because it is fun, but there is that fine line of like really landing it and making sure that you land it, you do it right so that you don't hurt yourself and you don't hurt the other person. It's timing, you know, it's storytelling. There's so much that happens in a 2 or 3 minute match. And there's just so many moments along the way that it all just has to come together with such precision. And that takes a high level of training. And so it was fun. They didn't give us enough time. Like it got thrown together super fast and, you know, and thankfully nobody got hurt. And here I am talking about it 25 years later.
So did you guys go to the power plant? Like, and who else was there? It was just the Nitro Girls and the power plant with Molly and
no. So for me, some of my sessions I did just with her. And so we all were based in Atlanta. So we were right there, you know, the power plant was at WCW headquarters. And we would rehearse there a lot too. So we were always there. And so, but like I was at, gosh, I don't even remember all the, because the people at the power plant were obviously a lot of the up and comings, right? It wasn't your top folks. It was more who's in training to get some TV time, who are they working through, and or who wants to be better so that they can have a greater chance of getting more TV time and working out their storylines and just working on their craft. So we were there a lot. We always saw a bunch of the guys. But when I had to go through my training, there were several of my sessions that it was a big group of us, right? So we're all training together. We're all doing warm-ups together. We're all taking bumps together, you know, so it was a bit of both, a lot of people, and then just some one-on-ones.
When you're there and you're doing that training, are you thinking like, oh, Nat, like this is my path now. Like now I'm going to be a wrestler. No, not at all.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, it's still literally, I was just like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing? And so, you know, I was already a doctor at that point. I had a practice. When I wasn't on the road, I was in my practice seeing patients. And so, interestingly enough, it was during one of our training sessions, I had to jump off the top rope, off the top turnbuckle, and I had to land, right? So I'm like landing elbows. So you got to look like, so I got to be ready to land on whoever my opponent would be. But first they just have you practice just jumping and taking that landing. And after a couple of times, I just landed really wrong and it just jarred me. And I got like the worst whiplash. And it was just like, oh, and you feel it immediately. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I could potentially injure myself.
Yeah.
And not just end what I'm doing here. I mean, that I'm like, I could end what my profession, like I've got to really think about this. Like, I don't think I'm cut out for this. And if you can't tell, like, I like to chat, and I had already been doing some things. Like, I'd be at the pay-per-views with Chad Damiani. We did co-hosting of kind of like the pre-show stuff. And so I was being looked at to come in, and I was going to be doing the Saturday morning show. And I just really, I was like, if I can't dance, I don't want to wrestle, because I just don't think that's the right path for me. And there's other people who that's what they want to do. So, you know, it was kind of like, well, where do we put her? And what do we do? Which is why I did a couple of different things. It's why I was a valet, you know, for a minute. I was in some different storylines. And then the Saturday morning show got greenlit. And that's when I went off air as far as seeing me on nitros and stuff. And then it was within, I think, like 6-8 weeks, we got the news that the company was going to be sold. And so then there was no more Saturday morning show, like nothing was moving forward. So I was in kind of this like back end, you wouldn't see me on TV, just holding pattern before I was released from my contract, and, you know, and everything was all going to shut down. So we knew it was coming, but it was a matter of who stays on air till the end, who's getting released early, you know? So it was an interesting time.
Crazy though, like, okay, the Nitro girl, then they break them up, so then you're training, then you're like, you're almost doing like 10 different aspects of the business, then it's like, oh, then maybe I can be like an announcer, maybe I can be, you know, a host. You're kind of going all over the place. They're trying to find a spot, or you're trying to kind of find your way there.
Yeah, a bit of both. And yeah, I mean, it's, and I think that's always, again, I didn't make the, I'm grateful. I don't have any regrets at all. I'm super grateful that I got the opportunity to be in the ring, to be a valet, you know, to do the training, I'm so grateful I had the experience. I learned so much about it and through it. You know, and you have to sometimes in life know what you don't want to know what you do want. And ultimately, you know, I never went searching for wrestling. It found me, and I'm so grateful that it did. I can't get over to this day. Not only are the Nitro girls my sisters, we are soul sisters. We are all still together quite often. We see each other multiple times a year. We have text, you know, group chats all the time. So like, I met family there that have stayed with me forever. I've got close relationships with some of the wrestlers, you know, just like I said, some of them will reach out like, hey, Melissa, hey, Doc Spice, I need a little help right now. Like, I just got injured. Or can you tell me, like, what should I take? Or should I do this? Should I do that? So, you know, to have these relationships, to have these friendships, to have these connections in the world that have just rippled out, it's been wonderful and fascinating. But yeah, I never thought I'd find it. It found me, and I'm grateful for it. But And I learned a lot. Like I said, I learned so much that actually put me on my path to do what I'm doing today. Not that I wasn't a doctor then, but to do it at scale in such a multimedia format. Because as soon as I left there, I was such an early adopter into really leveraging multimedia and video before the internet, is what it is today. So it poised me in a lot of ways. But yeah, it was interesting. Great. Wonderful.
Yeah. Originally though, like, how did they get you? Like, where did they find you? What were you doing? And like, what did they tell you? Like, hey, we're creating this brand new thing you've never seen before. It's like cheerleaders, but it's not. Like, how did they explain that all to you? And how'd they get you in?
So we all lived in Atlanta. I worked out at Main Event. So I've been in fit dance since I was little, 2.5 years old. I was a choreographer. At that point, I was finishing up my doctorate in chiropractic. I was a professional dancer in the Atlanta dance community. So I danced in music videos and things like that. And I was also a fitness instructor, nutritionist, personal trainer. And so I was at the gym all the time. And that's where it was Lex and Sting's gym. So that's where all of the wrestlers, and I didn't know that. I moved from Philadelphia down to Atlanta to go to school. I had no idea ending up in Marietta, Georgia would be the hub of professional wrestling, you know, like yeah, who knew? Sure. So it's just weird how life happened to kind of put me exactly where I was supposed to be to meet all the people and have the things. And so I was working out there. Kimberly used to come to my aerobics classes, and then she was doing, she knew I was a choreographer because I would do a choreography for some fitness professionals and stuff down there. I think she had just seen me and she was like, hey, I'm doing fitness competitions. I really need a choreographer. So we became friends and I had no idea who DDP was. I didn't know. I literally was clueless. And so she would tell me, oh yeah. And this is when they were still down in Orlando and they'd have to travel. So it's kind of like I knew of all the things that had happened over the years by way of Kim and we'd become friends. And then long story short, it was a kind of a, all of a sudden, like, hey, this, and so we worked together for a while and then they were gone and they were getting busy and I hardly ever saw her. And then another choreographer was like, oh my gosh, this project is happening and I'm going to be one of the choreographers on it. And I want you there at the audition. And I'm like, wait, what? Kim? Paige? Like, I know Kim. Like, and so I'm like, Kim, she's like, oh my gosh, Melissa, I didn't have your number. Like, I'm doing, so we're doing this thing. It's just like the Spice Girls, but it's for wrestling. It's the Nitro Girls and wrestling. It's all about personas and gimmicks and larger than life people. And we're going to have a representation of, you know, these different women and we're going to dance. And I was like, okay. She's like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I'm in. I'm like, what do you need? She's like, well, we need to run auditions. So I helped put together some different auditions around Atlanta. And it was funny because when it kind of came down to it, she's like, Melissa, I want you, but I had dark hair. Like my hair is naturally, if you can see my roots, like it's actually back then it used to be black. And she's like, I want you in this group, but we have too many brunettes. She's like, would you dye your hair blonde? And I'm like, yeah, it's just hair. I don't care. She's like, oh my gosh. Yay. And then it was kind of Spice was born, you know? So that's how it happened.
Did she give you the name as well?
No, we all got to pick our own names.
And you did it because of the Spice Girls, I'm guessing?
No. No, I did it here. I'm gonna fix my camera really quickly. Let's see if it'll come back in. Every once in a while, my camera goes funky. I'm so sorry. I know we're interviewing.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
I'm moving too much. It's getting blurry on me. Let's see if it'll start again. I might just be fuzzy. I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, it's all right. No worries.
If you need me to, I can log out and log back in if we have to. But to answer your question, how I came up with my name. So when I did my hair, because I had what was referred to as virgin hair, it had never been dyed or anything. And so I couldn't go from black all the way to like a platinum blonde. So they had to take it in stages. And so I was kind of a cinnamony color at first. And it was kind of like, oh, this is like cinnamon. I'm like, ooh, cinnamon spice. And so it was really kind of about my hair. And then I'm like, well, I'm Gemini. That's kind of me. Sugar and spice, everything nice, a little sassy, a little sweet. So it was just kind of this play on words that literally all kind of stemmed from my hair color. That's what it was. That's how it came about.
Just that simple, right?
Yeah.
So when you guys get brought onto TV and you're the Nitro Girls, who's mm-hmm. like the boss? Like is Eric telling you guys what to do, or do you guys have an agent, or is just Kimberly's in charge? Like or nobody's in charge? Like how did that work with the Nitro Girls?
Yeah, we did not have an agent, but Kimberly was the main point person with corporate, you know, and kind of like managed the communication and over us. And when it came to rehearsals, I was like the main choreographer. AC Jazz did some choreography also, out of the original group. So when it came to rehearsals, like I'd run rehearsals, right? Or if AC had a piece, she'd run that rehearsal. And so we were in rehearsal at least 4 days a week when we were not on the road, 3 or 4 days a week, depending on how much we traveled. And so when we would get there, I mean, it was pretty easy. Like, it was just running the show. It was the same thing every week for us. We'd get there and we would do sound check, and we would just kind of run through, make sure the music was right, lighting was right, knowing which segments we were going to be in and out of. So we just kind of knew where we were at in the show lineup, and we'd do a run through of whatever we were going to perform that night. And then you'd wait for the show to start, and you just knew where you're at and cue kind of the production lineup. So you had to be there like 2 segments before yours, ready on standby, you know, and then we come out, we do our thing, and then we would leave. And so we were kind of simple. I mean, we were a well-oiled machine. We were all professionals. We were all adult professional women that just loved being together, loved doing a great job. Nobody had any drama or irresponsibility or, you know, squeaky wheel kind of thing. So yeah, it was good.
When you're at the show, is it like pandemonium? Is there like chaos, or is it pretty organized?
It's very organized. And I think that WWE is even more organized now than we were, because I've been in a few of their productions over the years. But I mean, again, it's like, so listen, for example, you have a podcast, you produce it, right? So there's a production flow that has to happen. You've got to find your guests. You've got to decide, okay, what's the angle? How are we introing them? What are the questions we're going to ask? Where are we taking the audience over the arc of the story? Right. So whether it's live or pre-recorded, media, content development, storytelling is what is the arc and what has to happen and who does that include and where do they need to be? And if we've got 2 hours that we are on air and every match is, this one's a 2 minute, that's a 5 minute. This is like, it's time. We have to have commercial bumpers here, 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 here. So it's an actual, it's not flat. It's not indie. It's not an indie show, you know, and even indie shows have organization. I'm not taking anything away from them, but this was a multi-million dollar a week production. We had full production crews, you know, it's just like you're on a movie set and, you know, you got your PAs, everybody's like headsets are on, your directors, your executive producers, your like everybody knows who's supposed to be where when. You got your runners in case somebody's not showing up. So you can't miss your cues. You can't miss when you're supposed to be on air. You got to know where you're at. You got to know how to time yourself. And if you can't, you're not going to have a job. Like if anybody was having a drug or alcohol problem, which wasn't anything in the girls, but I'm saying like, you know, some of the guys, like there was back then, especially because they're on the road every night. And a lot of them were on pain pills and different things. And because they had to make it through somehow and they didn't have health insurance. They didn't have any kind of good care. Like it was unfortunate. It was really crappy. And we were a big production, right? So if for some reason somebody couldn't do their job, they're not coming back on TV. They're getting suspended. They got to go clean it up. They got to get it together. You had 3 strikes, you're out kind of policy. So if you want to work and you want to stay hired, you got to show up on time for your job. So that's how, you know, it was pretty professional operation.
What do they say? Like, what do they tell you? Like, you're going to be the cheerleaders of Nitro. Like, how do they describe like what you guys are going to be for the show?
Again, it was never cheerleaders. And I would never describe us in that way either. So it was like the way that it was like, hey, we're going to be kind of like the Fly Girls from In Living Color. Again, really dating myself, right? So
I remember them very well.
Yeah. Lou got her start. It was more like, you know what? You are the pretty side of wrestling. You're like the Fly Girls meets the Spice Girls, because they wanted the Spice Girls from the sense of they wanted us to have very unique looks and characters, character development. And, you know, we did our storytelling through dance, but there was always that potential, like you might be involved in a storyline, you might not, right? But it was just a matter of like, I don't know. Am I answering the question? I'm losing my...
To me, it just seems like, right, WWF Raw was around before Nitro. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I know Eric Bischoff always said he tried to go differently. So it's almost like he's bringing Broadway or he's bringing dance or he's bringing something else, because WWF never had anything like that.
Yeah.
Like, let's say all the commercial break, or they come back from commercial, they go to the announcer. Like, WCW went to the ring and you guys were dancing and stuff. I mean, it was completely different.
It was very different. And again, you know, because, and part of how it was sold to us isn't that you guys are cheerleaders. It's we want to represent women differently in this sport. We want to give the audience more that the entire family can sit around. We want to do things differently in this industry, in the genre. Like, let's make it everything that's great about it, but let's make it family friendly. Let's think of things outside of the box. And so, you know, I mean, that's how it was pitched to us. It's, you're going to be dancing, but you're going to go out. I mean, a big thing that we did, when I say the pretty side of wrestling, we were kind of the goodwill ambassadors, because when we weren't on air, we did on air ticket sales. You know, we went out and did a lot of the press junkets. So because the show was live, we would go out and do the ticket sales all the time. So it'd be like two of us and a wrestler or two and our PR group. And so we'd be in different cities a couple of months before the show was going to be there live. And when we were there, we would do everything from autograph signings and radio shows and morning television. And we do interviews, we would dance, we go to hospitals. Like, so we were kind of the goodwill ambassadors to the organization in promoting the show and the programming overall.
Was that like a lot extra for you guys to do? Cause it's almost like, hey, you know, obviously you've got to work on Nitro, you got to do the show, but by the way, also we're sending you here, and, you know, helping out ticket sales, signing autographs, doing, like, was that a lot to do? I mean, cause it seems like they're giving you more responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, it was a full-time job and that's what we were hired for. So, you know, because at first when we started, when we weren't on TV or on the road, we were back in the studio and we were rehearsing. And in the beginning we had to create, like, I mean, we were thrown together so quickly, very, very, very quickly. And so, like, all of a sudden getting routines together, learning the rhythm of the show, because nobody came from television. Like some of us were professional dancers, some of us were not. So there was different skill sets coming in that we had to gel, and we had to kind of figure out, like, okay, get choreography, get costumes, understand the landscape. So it was a full-time job. And meaning in the beginning, a lot of hours went into all of that. But as we got further into it, it was about, I don't know, were we maybe 6 months in, is when they started to really heavily use us on the promotion front. And it was a little bit at a time. So first it would be like one promo every 2 weeks. And then it was a promo every week. And then it was, well, a couple of promos a week. And it waxed and waned, you know, and there was six of us. And at one time, what were we up to? Seven of us. So we would take turns and not everybody had to go out all the time. You know, so it didn't become too demanding that it felt like, oh, we can't do this. And we're, you know, they're not paying us for this. Like, it was like, this is part of the job. We have a contract. This is a full-time gig and this is what's required of us. So we go do it. And that was it. And it was always fun. I mean, it's not like we were in terrible conditions, you know, I mean, everything was taken care of. We were always supported. We had good people around us. We were honored and happy to go out and represent the brand and the show and the whole thing.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of positivity with the Nitro girls. Like, you never hear anything negative about them or like, oh, that was a bad idea. You always feel like that was great. They should have kept them, or that was a good idea. So it was great to have you guys as ambassadors, because it seemed like pretty much everybody was a fan of the Nitro girls.
Yeah, it was really special. And at the time, you know, I had no idea how significant we were. Like, we were only there for a couple of years, you know, but to be able to 25 years later have any level of relevance to the industry speaks actually big volumes, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we were something that had never been done. And what was really interesting is from there, other sports teams, because yes, there were cheerleaders, like, oh, Dallas cheerleaders, right? There were football cheerleaders. There were dancers for basketball teams that would come out and do a halftime dance. But the way we did things as characters in costumes, on air, like, sometimes we'd be interviewed, like, part of an integral part of the overall story arc and actual personalities that weren't just fluff and filler, but were as anticipated as the wrestlers. I mean, we were a key part of that storyline that had never been done before. Now, you saw that start to emerge after us in other industries, you know, so to even know that there was some type of a ripple effect that spread out just from the influence in any way, shape or form of the Nitro Girls is pretty wonderful. And, you know, even though WWE didn't see any value in keeping the Nitro Girls together, which is okay, we all had different paths to go on, so I'm grateful for it. I am so honored to know the impact that we made overall that I never could have guessed it in a million years. And so it's very humbling that whenever we get to go out and sign autographs and see fans, to have so many come up, you know, and now it's of course a lot of adults, parents, oh, I watched you when I was, on my poster in my teenager. I'm like, oh, like now I'm really excited. Like, yep. Oh, thanks. You know, and they've got their kiddos and they're like, oh my gosh, this is fun. And the kids get to fall in love. And it's just so sweet, like to see the multi-generational effects of this sport and our fans and the love from the fans. And they're just like, I don't care if you were from 25 years ago. I grew up with you and I still love you and you still matter and you made an impact in my life. And it's like, wow, it's incredible. So
when you look back at the Nitro Girls, obviously Bischoff, right? I mean, he's running WCW. Any sort of relationship with Eric? Because it's funny, people have different opinions on him, but he completely changed the game, completely changed wrestling. And yeah, he's right. He did do completely different WWF. Because if you watch Raw early days, it was very like cookie cutter. This happens here. Yeah. Everybody. Completely changed wrestling. Even how it's done today, they still copy his exact format to wrestling of live wrestling. So what did you think of Eric?
It was a love-hate relationship with absolute respect, as you probably would have for any boss, right? Like he had a very like, listen, Eric was brilliant. He knew what he wanted. It's like, it wasn't a, like you were just like, if I don't do my job right, I'm out of here. So it's not like it was a fear-based mentality. It was a, this is serious. Like nobody fucked this up basically. Like this is important. Like we're all here as professionals. We're going to do our job and no screwing around. Get here, do your thing, be professional, be courteous, show up on time, leave. Don't cause any rifts. Like just let's have a good show. And so not like any of us did that, but it was kind of like, uh-oh, are we going to get dad mad at us? Like, are we okay? Okay. You know, it's kind of like, oh. So there was a little bit of a fear factor of just kind of like, don't get on his radar. Cause if you tick off Eric, like you could lose your job, but like, just keep your head down. Right. So there was kind of that feeling, at least among us girls. I can't speak for any of the wrestlers, but that's kind of how we felt. And I think, you know, in hindsight, he was looking out for the wrestlers. He was looking out for us. He's like, no fraternizing. You guys stay there. You guys stay there. No, you know, it's like, this is not some big party time. Like, we're here to work. And so, like, it was very clear lines were drawn, very clear boundaries were set. Again, I think it was more like a strong father looking after all the kids and making sure that things, there were no parties going on, you know, when the parents were away. And so I respect him. I respect what he did for the show, what he did for the industry. And today, all these years later, as grownups, all of us functioning, you know, thriving adults, it's beautiful to see him whenever we're at autograph signings or whenever, like there's been some podcasts that we've all been on together. And he is so, he's so kind to us. And it's always fun to see him. We, you know, big hugs and big thanks and gratitude. So, but yeah, in the moment, it's kind of like, oh, okay, keep your head down, keep going.
So there wasn't supposed to be any dating. He didn't want the Nitro Girls and the wrestlers fraternizing, huh?
No fraternizing, strict no fraternization policy.
Did anybody break that rule? Did the Nitro Girls, right? David Flair dated Stacy Keibler for a while, I believe.
They did date. They did. And technically she was not a Nitro Girl when they dated. So. Okay. They're a little different rules, I guess. Right. No, I mean, and we were all either married or engaged or had significant others outside of it. So, yeah.
When you look at, right, that time period in wrestling, you could probably say 10 million wrestling fans watched wrestling a week, whether it was WWF or WCW, the Monday Night Wars. I mean, it was so popular then. It was crazy. I mean, it's mainstream. They're on the front cover of all these stuff. They're just everywhere. Can you even, like, fathom that or believe that? Because, even now, wrestling is in a bit of a boom period. It's popular. But, man, back then, it was crazy. It was mainstream back then.
It was super mainstream. And again, like, it's just, it's when you're in it, you know, when you're in something, you, and for us, it was a job, right? It's like, and it was, you're expected to show up and do your job and do it at your absolute best. And so when you go to work, you don't necessarily step back and appreciate the work you're doing. You're doing your job, right? So you're just in it, you're doing it. And meaning it, so many times I would just be like, these people are here for us. You know, like, what is happening? What kind of twilight zone am I living in? This is bonkers and bananas. And it was thrilling and fun and wonderful. And so it was just lightning, you know, magic in a bottle kind of thing, like just a beautiful time. And it was just so fun. I mean, it's a part of pop culture forever now, just that time in history with the Monday Night Wars. And I think it's been tried to be replicated ever since. Right. And to your point, like, look, one of the biggest WrestleManias to date, with everything that WWE is doing to play on nostalgia and really kind of the way that they're trying to leverage some of their old stars and new stars and key stars. And so I appreciate what they're doing. And I think it's a great time in wrestling, but yeah, it doesn't compete with what was. And I don't know if it ever will be, because I'm not in it anymore, but what I hear, some of the background rumblings, is it's so different now. Again, we were at a time that as an organization, we were also a family. It was way before social media was a thing. And while everybody wanted their time in the spotlight, you weren't driven by egos. Like, you know, like, people knew their pecking order, but it was also like, come on, we're here to help each other. Like, we're road dogs. We all had to grind it out, ride in cars from city to city. Like, there's a certain culture at the time that we were in it that still, like, you're still paying your dues. Even if you get a bigger paycheck than somebody else, you're all still hoofing it from one city to the next. You're sitting long hours, you're traveling hard, you're working out, you know, everybody's at the gym early in the morning, you're not eating any carbs, you know, like, everybody's having a shared experience. And there was respect, there was appreciation. And I'm not saying that there isn't today, but I think today, especially with social media, and it's such an economy of one. And like, how can I use this to get over even more, right? And to expand my own fan base outside of this. And while I think that's beautiful, we all need to and we can, but I think when that happens, maybe it takes away from some of that communal dynamic that made it also like really special to have so many of those shared experiences with, you know, the organization, the, you know, the wrestlers and the Nitro girls alike. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I think the industry as a whole has evolved. So I don't know if we'll ever capture lightning in a bottle again, because it's just a very different landscape now. It's a different time and place. So yeah.
Feels like way more people were watching it, but I know they're making a ton of money nowadays, but obviously inflation, everything, the prices are up, but it's one of those things where maybe we're making more money, but more people did watch back then. It was crazy. Do you watch at all anymore? Do you keep up with it at all or not really?
No, I mean, every once in a while, like, you know, I mean, I follow a few people, like I'll see some stuff. So enough just to be like, oh, that interesting thing just happened. 2 years ago when Queen Charmel got inducted into the Hall of Fame, Che and I went with her. And we sat out in the audience. And it's so interesting because Tori Wilson just put a post out. And so this was the first time at this past WrestleMania, the first time that she ever sat in the audience. And she had the same experience that we had when Che and I sat in the audience. We're like, we had never sat in, we were never in the audience ever.
Right. Backstage. Ever. Yeah.
And we're like, this is fascinating. And it's so fun. Like, to actually be at a live wrestling event is super fun. It is so freaking fun. And it was great to get to experience that after being on the other side of it for so long. And I loved that when Tori posted that same thing, I was like, oh my gosh, like I felt the same way. I know, it's crazy. So I'd totally go watch a live one, but I hardly ever, John, even watch TV right now. Like, wow. I told you, I was working until 10 last night. So I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't do a lot of that. You know, I'm just so, but I love cheering everybody on when I'm seeing big things happen for my fellow friends.
Now, when WCW ended, Right. And it's no more. They close the stores. They sell the WWF. Did you expect maybe to go to WWF and do something? Like, were you upset? I know you said no regrets and you all kind of found your own path, but was there ever any expectations at that point? Like, oh, I'm going to WWF now.
No. And I think because they were already dismantling the Nitro Girls and they had taken the Nitro Girls off air months before that. So even though the Nitro Girls were still there, like once they broke us all up, right? And then they brought in, so now they've got me as a valet, Tigress was wrestling, Charmel was Storm and Paisley and all the different things. So Che was the only original Nitro Girl left. And there was, and Chiquita had come in. You know, we had several other ones that had a minute on TV, but then TV time kind of went away for the Nitro Girls. They were still there, but they really were performing at commercial breaks. And so, so because of that, they were already, I don't want to say decreasing our value, but they were helping to ease us. And I don't know if that was intentional, unintentional. I have no idea. But they started to take us out of the focus of being in a storyline. Like it just, it wasn't there anymore after they kind of broke it all up. So I think for WWE, it was kind of like, well, what do we need them for? We got another enough other stuff going on. You know, like they're, if they're not a vital part of the storyline, why do we need them? Had everything ended right as they were kind of breaking us up and like that key point, maybe they would have brought us over or at least put us on, you know, to try. But they did obviously bring on Charmel, right? Who went on to be Queen Charmel. So like Tigress, I don't think she got offered. She did not get offered a contract. But Charmel did. She got offered the opportunity to go on the indie circuit. So she had to go prove herself. She had to make that decision of, do I want to do this? And she said, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to do this. And she did. And I mean, obviously, look, she's a Hall of Famer. So, yep. So she made that choice for her, but none of the rest of us had that desire. And it was a much different environment. And we knew that. And it was kind of like, and we also all had a music group too. So for us, I think if we wanted it and if we really pushed, I think that we had the relationships and the network there that we could have all kind of made our own personal run for a contract. I can't say that we would have gotten it, but we could have at least been active in pursuing it. But we had a music group and we were shopping record contracts, record deals, and things were happening with us with that. And we were kind of like, yeah, we feel really complete with our time in wrestling and this is here and we're doing this. Like we wanted to stay together as a group. That was really important to us versus all being doing separate things and going out and being wrestlers. So, yeah.
As we hit the wind down, head towards the finish here, what is next for you? Because obviously you've got a lot going on, but what's coming up down the pike?
Well, you know, let's see. I mean, it's where we started, Human Longevity Institute. That's my baby. It's my thing. And we certify doctors, coaches, clinicians, biohackers, you know, personal trainers. So we've got certification programs for anybody that wants to come into the industry to help people live better, longer. We also have front-facing programs. So for me, I do a tremendous amount of, I've got two more books coming out. We are opening into global markets. I speak all over. I speak at biohacking conferences, clinical conferences, you know, corporations bring me out, just kind of like my TED talk, right? My TED talk is on why we should say yes to stress and what is stress really? And because none of us really realize how the ramifications of modern day living and what it can teach us about ourselves to be healthier, but also how it can be our foe, you know, kind of working against us to take us on the path of dishealth and disease. So I'm really led on the legacy of helping people to know to really awaken their own potential within to live more, better now in what that means to them. Like we don't have to settle. We can be more alive. We can have more of exactly what we do want. It just starts with a desire and a choice to say yes to self. So I'm kind of on a mission just to, you know, inspire people to remember the greatness within. And then if they have a desire to support themselves on that path, to offer the resources, the tools. I also have a podcast, Human Longevity Podcast, although we're rebranding it. We're starting a whole new season just called Live Better. So it's all the things that we can do physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, you know, just to truly live better today for more tomorrow. So what's next? More Human Longevity Institute. Yeah. Melissa. Yeah.
Now, if somebody wanted to check out your podcast, follow you on social media, I mean, you have so much stuff going on. Your website, where can everybody find you?
I think the easiest place, they can go to humanlongevityinstitute.com, or they could go to docmelissa.com. Those are my two main places. And from humanlongevityinstitute.com, everything is there. I've got tons of free resources, tons of freebies. Mini courses. That's where you can find my podcast. You can find out the latest episodes. So it's kind of like go there first and then wherever you want to shoot from there. So yes, we're on Spotify and all the different types of platforms, but sometimes it's just easier. Find me there, grab some goodies, find some tools to help you live better today for more tomorrows. I've got a whole meditation series out that's on different platforms. So yeah, humanlongevityinstitute.com. Go there, grab the things.
All your socials are on there as well.
All my socials, yeah.
All right, everybody, check out Dr. Melissa Peterson. Go to humanlongevityinstitute.com. Thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it. WCW Nitro Girl Spice, thank you.
John, thank you. It's been super fun.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick 'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.